As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, this is Mike here from the Glue Guys. Probably sound like I am in an ocean. I am in upstate New York on vacation. This episode coming up is Brian and I talking about a bunch of the Brooklyn Nets' free agent targets. We also discuss like Jeff Green and Blake Griffin and sort of the fringe free agent rotation pieces that the Nets currently have that may be on their way out, along with Bruce Brown. The reason why this episode is going to sound different is that Brian and I recorded one super long episode that we broke up into two parts. The first part is already out there. We released it last week. It had to do a lot to do with Spencer Dinwiddie. This episode is all about free agent targets. So please enjoy, and we're going to keep talking about free agency, trades, everything the Nets do to improve their team going forward. And welcome back,
Brad. Oh, good to be back.
Let's hit some of our emails. And again, if you want to jump in on the email sphere, netspod@gmail.com. Yes, Brian.
I do just want to hit the last little bit of MPL because this is a name that's going to come up here is Miles Turner. He says Joe Harris for Miles Turner. A lot of people talking about Miles Turner. I wonder if this is informed by fantasy basketball because Miles Turner is so disproportionately valuable in because he hits threes, is around 80% free throws, takes up your center spot, and is like leading the league by a wide margin in blocks. So his fantasy value is intensely huge, right? People love, and he's at the top. He's the top, one of the top. If you're playing head-to-head categories, you're monitoring Miles Turner. But that's not the scoop on Miles Turner all the time. From a winning basketball games for the Indiana Pacers POV.
I mean, I'd be fine. I'd rather have Joe Harris than Miles Turner because I think I'd get some combination of centers that are pretty good, like a real center, and I have an idea in my free agent targets that we're going to hit quickly that like you don't pay that much for and you keep Joe Harris. So if I'm dealing Joe Harris, it better be for like – a real sturdy defensive wing who I know can pick up like any guy 1 through 4 and who can also shoot threes. Like I'm not trading him for a center because I think I can still get value out of center in a different way.
Here you go.
So no on Miles Turner.
We're keeping it moving. Next up, Cherboy, Max Bray, AKA D Bronx. Wait, no, sorry. That was somebody else. Lol. Wait, is it? No, who is it? Yeah, no, Max Bray. Said somebody brought this up in the Discord. That's why I had that in my head. Shout out to the Discord, by the way. Invite in the Twitter bio, in our Twitter bio. Go hop in the conversation. It's a little bit, it's the off season. So the messages aren't firing. We need you in there. Says Jeremy Grant. I know he's not a free agent. I know he's a borderline all-star and this would break the league, but damn, I would do something with Joe or Spence or any collection of non-Big Three players. Blah, 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 to get him. It goes on. Thank you, Max Bray. Mike, we've talked Ben Simmons as the primary target.
Yeah.
Could you as easily insert a Jeremy Grant with any of your sign and trade mumbo jumbo you've been talking?
Yeah, I just don't. So the Pistons are the number one, you know, the number one overall pick. They're likely to take either Cade Cunningham or Jalen Green. Both are ball handlers, where Cade is more the guy that can actually run your offense to some degree, where Green is like sort of like a two-guard dynamo, athletic dynamo, who still would have the ball in his hands a bunch. So while I do think like Spencer makes sense for them, that's good. Joe Harris, I think they would have no interest in a Joe Harris, where they are in their development. Like the Pistons still probably want to suck this upcoming season to get another high draft pick to go along with Sadiq Bey, who should have been a net, Isaiah Stewart, and Killian Hayes, and whoever they draft number one overall. The interesting thing about Jeremy Grant is, and I don't know if Bill Simmons was joking about this, but Bill Simmons said that KD and Jeremy Grant have been working out together in D.C. Mm. They had been, or they have in the past. They're both from the same area, in Washington, D.C. area. Jeremy Grant would be awesome. He's also very expensive for what he is. He's very good. I think that if he got traded to the Nets, the value that the Pistons got out of him, even though they overpaid him initially, but then it looked like a good contract, he would diminish back to the guy he was in with the Nuggets. And he's getting paid like $20 million a year. He's not worth it if he's just like your fourth player. He's worth it if he's your best player, which he is for the Pistons. So I don't see Jeremy Grant coming over here.
Mm-hmm.
And a part of the reason why he went to the Pistons is, and he said this publicly, that he wanted to be like the focal point of a team. And so I doubt that within that just 1 year that he's like, actually, I'd rather be the fourth star behind, like I never have the ball in my hands.
Yeah.
So I love the idea though. And it actually would be pretty easy to be like Spencer and, you know, Spencer and something else. Spencer in our first round pick gets you, you know, Jeremy Grant. Right? That's easy. But I don't think it happens.
Next up, sure, boy, maybe, or girl, who knows, Sorrow in New Jersey. Sorrow, S-A-R-O, says, I sent this DM to you guys on Twitter. Sorry we missed that, Sorrow. That's on us. As much as I love Joe Harris, doesn't it make sense that he is the one voted off the island? So goes on to say that, you know,
like what you could do with Joe Harris, basically
as
what you could do with a Joe Harris deal.
Right. And that Shamet, well, it goes on to say Shamet is 90% the shooter he is and a better defender, younger, more aggressive and way cheaper. Some of that I agree with, some of that I don't. Shamet is for me as inconsistent as Joe Harris, if not more. So there's a whole, I mean, he is more, I mean, by every metric, with the exception of this terrible meme that Joe Harris can't perform in big playoff games, which Sarah makes some reference to here. So has the Joe Harris situation crested? Are we in an emergency? Pull the emergency lever, smash the glass, turn the dial, flip the switch. What do we do, Mike? Are we getting rid of Joe Harris?
I think it's pretty close, but I don't think it's there. I don't think the glass has been smashed. I think the glass has been – someone's breathing on the glass. They're making little smiley faces on it, you know, when you breathe on it and you kind of
– like in an emergency.
But they're not smashing it.
Like the way that like before something really bad happens, you blow hot air onto an emergency glass and make emojis on it the way that people do.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. The way people do. Yeah. Yeah. Right. In case of emergency, make emojis on this glass. I don't think it's there yet. I think it's right there on the edge. And the only thing is we're not going to learn about who Joe Harris truly is until the next playoff series, right? Like, because he's going to be amazing in the regular season. He's going to be one of the best 3-point shooters. He's going to have games where he shoots, you know, like 6 for 7 from three and the Nets like look amazing and all that stuff. But we're not going to learn about, is this truly Joe Harris in the postseason until the next postseason? And that's kind of a scary thing to be having that question looming over Joe's entire season. Now, a lot of guys in the NBA have dealt with that and then have had good postseasons. So, like, it's not like he's Chuck Knobloch, where he has the yips. I don't think he's at Yip level, but he was so bad. And the one thing I do think the Joe Harris question kind of exposed is he's a better defender than what people believe, right? He's a better ball handler than what people believe. But really, in the playoffs, he was horrible defending, I think. I really strongly feel like he was not very good at all. He offered nothing defensively. He usually offers something. He offered nothing in the playoffs. And he couldn't ball. He had no ball handling, and the team needed – they actually needed that the Joe that we used to see under Kenny Atkinson, where like he would get the ball off of a screen, not put up the shot, but drive to the hole and score. Like, why was that impossible for him to do in the playoffs? But I think they're gonna try to, they're gonna give it one more year with Joe.
Well, the problem with that, I mean, just to answer that last little bit, was like by games 3 through 7, like they were kind of acknowledging like the negative headspace that Joe was in and daring him to shoot the threes. Like they weren't trying to run him off the 3-point line. Yeah. And that's his big, that's, I mean, he's not like a fast person. He's just really a dangerous weapon from the 3-point line. That's what opens up the drive and kick game. But that was not there. That they weren't closing out on him.
The reason that they would trade Joe Harris is, and this is literally it, is if Kevin Durant texted Sean Marks and said, "Sean, I don't think your boy Joey's got it," you know, and basically he's like, "I don't have faith in him."
These texts,
because, yeah. But yeah, they all, you know, they're still on text. They're not WhatsApping or DMing on Insta. It's all text
in messages. The Discord. Could be the Discord.
They're all in Brooklyn Nets Discord. Wild place that would be.
Yeah. Talk to Sean Marks in the Glue Guys Discord. Link in the Twitter bio.
And I don't mean this in a nefarious way, but superstar players, when the pressure gets increased over the playoffs, you can see who they trust and who they don't trust. Now, like Michael Jordan didn't trust like any of his teammates for the longest time, right? So it's like... Mm-hmm. And he had some really good teammates over his time in Chicago. He learned to trust Steve Kerr and Scottie Pippen, though. I don't want to get into the whole Steve Kerr, Scottie Pippen thing right now, but
Scottie's just letting it rip. I mean, that's great.
Kind of great. Yeah. But also I'm a little worried about him mentally. Like, okay, yeah. Is he breaking down in front of us? is this like an NBA version of the movie Network? Like, is he like... right. Or a more modern reference Joker? Like, is he just is he gonna arrive on Robert De Niro's talk show?
It's funny, and I'm shooting Robert tired De Niro of in the head. It's not, yeah.
I just spoiled. Damn it! People actually tweeted at me. I need to stop spoiling shows. Everyone who do. Yeah. Fuck. I'm sorry.
How much responsibility do people have to be like, I was going to watch all of the movies and you can't talk about any movies anymore? Like, I'm flipping it back at people.
That Joker reveal is kind of a...
It's a movie from 5 years ago.
I don't really
know
how long... Joker, but it was 2 years ago, I think. I don't know. I that was not fair. I apologize. I'm not going to edit this out, but not fair to you, audience. I apologize. What was I saying? Scottie Pippen. Oh, Scottie like Pippen. If Kevin Durant and James Harden end up just not trusting Joe Harris, then he should be traded. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't trust him, then he has no utility on this team. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
Hot
but
takes.
I don't think he's there yet.
Next up is, I'm going to say Asa, A-C-A, Asa? I'm going Asa Petrovic, classic Nets name. I know he has one year left on his contract, but what do you guys think about Jusuf Nurkić and if he is a realistic acquisition for the Nets? Asa, I like where your head's at in terms of need, because I think that that's a cool player to fit what we're doing. Mike, do you think in terms of, you're the business mind on the show, sure. Does this make business sense for Jusuf and the Nets?
So I love... the idea of Nurkić. Like, I love the idea of like a devastating low post force just inserted on this offense. Like, just like a big burly monster of a man.
That's a bear.
Put into the middle of
bear man. Yeah.
That's a big dude. I love the idea of it. I don't see so Portland's most effective lineups are CJ McCollum, Damian Lillard, and Nurkić when they're all together. And Nurk has been hurt. The Nurk has been hurt many, many times. So, like, The Trailblazers know that, and they know that they're just going to hang on to Nurk and hope that he's healthy. Mm-hmm. And if he's healthy, then they're a really pretty good team. The only way that he becomes available is if Damian Lillard pushes out, and then they just trade everyone. And if that's the case, man, I would love Nurk. He's not making, he's making like 12, he's basically making DeAndre Jordan's salary.
Yeah.
And if you could like, if you could cobble together some stuff, send it to Portland for Nurkic and just like manage minutes and just have him in for big series. Amazing. I would love, like we love Sabonis, like you and I, Domantas Sabonis, that sort of like tough, like mm-hmm. devastating offensive force down low. That's yeah. what I would want.
I like how he sure. gets, how he gets pink over time, Domantas. That's part of, that's part of the appeal too. Just watching the level of pinkness. Next up, Cheerboy Ryan Newman, aka D Bronx 1414 on the Discord. Shout out to the Discord. Says, hello guys. A name I've been looking at eagerly in free agency is, you ready for this, Mike? You ready for a ghost?
Yes.
Is Otto yeah. Porter Jr. In return for
there
helping him make 100 million plus over the last 4 years, maybe the prodigal son will be open to returning home on an MLE deal, question mark? Feels like he could be that defensive shooty boy wing this roster sorely lacked this year. There's another part to it too, which I want to talk about, but let's start there. Mike, Otto Porter.
Yes. Otto Porter is someone that I have been targeting, for a long time. And here's what we have. I mean, we know that Sean Marks, he just can't, it's which character, Jake Gyllenhaal or Heath Ledger in Brokeback Mountain. He just can't quit, some of his former loves. Remember, he says, I can't quit you.
Yeah. Which, I'm trying to remember which one was it now.
It was probably Jake, right? Because Heath's character was very...
He's like, I could quit. I could quit this. Yeah.
Yeah. that was kind of his yeah. whole attitude. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I could keep it moving.
Yeah.
Sean Marks didn't get Tyler Johnson, and then he finally did. Alan Crabb, he gave Alan Crabb a horrible contract, and then he traded for Alan Crabb whilst he was on that horrible contract. Otto Porter Jr., he gave a massive deal to. The Wizards matched. And it ended up not being a great thing for the Wizards. But Otto Porter Jr., if you remove sort of the financials, this is what he was last year. 10-5-2, 38% from three. He's like 6'8", 6'9". Last year was like his worst season as a pro since when he was a younger player. But like, what does it take to get him? I would love Otto Porter Jr. Like if he's your ninth player, if you can kind of get him there where – He adds versatility to your lineup. He's not a small ball five ever, but what he is a guy who can be your 3-4 wing shooter playing defense and is like the perfect role player. Mm-hmm. This is the point of Otto Porter's career where it's like, I don't think he's going to get a big contract. So maybe the Sean Marks relationship, and Otto Porter Jr. went to Georgetown. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's from Maryland. I know KD didn't, but KD's plugged into the DMV basketball scene. Maybe they have a relationship. Mm. Love Otto Porter Jr.
Heart him. Ryan, you did something right here. And then the second part to his question is vet minimum guy looking at James Johnson, another guy who has made a pretty penny the last few years and might be willing to hop on a true contender for less money, and also played very little this year, so he might be fresh for next season. I have James Johnson on my list. I have always loved James Johnson. I haven't talked about this to pretty much anybody. I whispered it into a jar, screwed the lid on tight, and didn't tell anybody that I really like James Johnson. It's a well-kept secret. So I'm pro this, but I also don't know if he takes a vet minimum. Seems like the kind of guy that would. It seems like he's at that point in his career.
I don't think he'll have any other option but a vet minimum.
Yeah.
Like that's also sort of the calculus you have to do here, right? It's like where they are. So I like James Johnson, but like how many roster spots are we talking about? Right. I mean,
right.
The Nets could potentially have they could potentially need five players this offseason, depending on how things shake out. Mm-hmm. Are those five guys getting time, or are they going to be kind of people in and out of the lineup? I don't, it's tough to predict. Like, is Bruce Brown coming back? What are they going to do with Spencer Dinwiddie signing trade? Is Blake coming back? Is Jeff Green coming back?
Yeah.
I think James Johnson should be on like the third tier. If the first tier is like re-sign all of the dudes.
Yeah.
If the second tier is like kind of the auto, in my mind, Otto Porter's a tier above James Johnson. James Johnson should be like just right below that then. Like veteran guys you could be interested in, but they're not your first call on the start of free agency.
I agree.
Can I debut a guy who should be first call?
Oh, real okay. quick. Yeah, debut.
Because I don't know if there's going to be a mailbag question.
Let's do
this.
Let's do a debutante ball for this guy.
Wait, isn't that? Oh, I was thinking of antebellum ball, which is the thing that you don't want to.
It's the same kind of deal.
That ruined the Bachelor. Racist.
Oh yeah. Both racist. Well, I don't know the debutante. Anyway, I don't know enough. I'll just sit on the sideline. Go ahead.
By the way, Civil War was about slavery. I don't know if
I agree.
Some people say it wasn't. I think it was.
Yeah.
A guy I absolutely love, and I am very serious about it. It's a guy that I've loved for a long time in the NBA, and I've always wanted the Nets to have. And I've always wanted the Nets to have an approximate of this guy if they couldn't get this specific player. And I mean this wholeheartedly. The Nets should be targeting, with their taxpayer mid-level exception, the big $5 million a year contract that they can give to someone, Boban.
Wow.
Boban. Here's the deal. Okay. He only played 8 minutes a game for the Dallas Mavericks. Hmm. 5 points and four rebounds in those 8 minutes. There's a reason why he's never played big minutes, is that his body cannot handle big minutes. But the Nets need a big old dude on the roster. They can't just have a bunch of small ball fives and skinny guys like Nick Claxton. They need a real center. Boban became so crucial for the Dallas Mavericks in the playoffs. Now, I would think that they would want him back, but if you could get Boban, he's been making below the mid-level exception recently. If you can get him for mid-level exception, which is like 5.5, he is a weapon on this team and the best vibes in the NBA.
Big vibes.
And I don't think – we can't forget as kind of actually good vibes this season really was for the Nets. The Nets are in a precarious place in personalities. It could shift negatively quickly. Mm. So you want to continue to bring in the Jeff Greens, the Blake Griffins, and the Bobons. You want to bring in good vibes, professional, happy. And if I would just envisioning a lineup of, at various moments, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, James Harden, Boban and Nick Claxton, zone D.
Wow,
give me the zone
lockdown.
Give me the 2-3 Syracuse zone.
Lock it down.
Oh my God, I would. They should. I mean, I pray that they target a Boban.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And just to circle back to the James Johnson thing, though, I like James Johnson. I was doing a little bit of research on also guys like Mike Scott. And, you know, reading about him, like a lot of the Sixers guys are like, the problem with Mike Scott is that he's older now and he can only guard slower, more like center players. So he's not the same kind of like diverse defender that he used to be. I think James Johnson fits into a similar category as they age, their lateral foot speed, you know, gets less good. And then you're stuck being an undersized five again. And we have so many of those. So, yeah, anyways.
Yeah. And that's why James Johnson is just like, I know he's going to provide moments, but is there ever a moment when he'll actually be out there in crunch time for you? Like, he's not Jay Crowder, right? Like, he's a tier or four below that at this point.
Next up, your boy, Anthony Siniscalchi. Anthony says, hey guys, love the show. I was looking through the free agent list as well as some trade targets. Do you guys think any of these make sense? I'm just going to fire them off all at once.
Please.
Yes or no. No, each one. Or
give a Gatling gun. No, just fire them all off, then we'll dive in.
J.J. Redick, Dwight Howard, Carmelo Anthony, P.J. Tucker, Nerlens Noel, Bismack Biyombo. What do you got? Anything jumping out?
So how offended do you think J.J. Redick would be if he doesn't become a Brooklyn Net?
He's going to take that to heart. It's going to be a whole thing. it's going to be. I mean, here's the problem. I mean, it's, and I'm on the fence about like his, I hate to say it, but his utility is, he's getting quite old now, man.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was in.
But
he,
do you, okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you trust him more than Landry Shamet? Because he's not, so we joked about him being the Joe Harris replacement if they traded Joe. He isn't, so if you don't, if people don't know, I mean, obviously he played in New Orleans this past season, was traded to Dallas, and I don't think, if he played at all, he barely played in Dallas. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he was hurt or whatever or something. JJ shot 37% from three. So this isn't the guy that, like, no, that we used to think of as being one of the best shooters in the NBA. Like, maybe he can still shoot really well from three, but 37% is basically Landry Shamet territory.
Yeah.
He's not, like, the surest of things.
And, I mean, a big part of his, like, the way that he would get open and stuff was his, like, off-ball running around the whole game. That was, like, his, you know, he was one of these types of dudes. That's a tool that declines over time. You know, I don't know. I just... If you're right that it's, I mean, there's also a thing where it's like he's playing in, he's in weird situations, and I, you know, I don't know if he ever played in Dallas, and if he did, like if he was like incentivized to be, you know, shooting his best balls and all that stuff. I don't doubt that he could get up to the 40s, you know, or like, you know, again, if he wanted to. But again, you're like, you're losing a lot. You're leaving a lot on the table with JJ Redick, obviously on the defensive side of the ball. But just in general, like, you know, Landry Shamet, he's like, what, 24 years old? Like, there's the potential to see a lot more of that dude's game. And I just can't imagine a situation in which it'd be really like, we need JJ in over Landry right now. We just got to get him out. We got to get JJ in, you know?
I still think it's very possible that JJ Redick is still on the team, because he is if he's a veteran minimum guy, that's fine. Like, if he's your guy, the only thing is he's not a defender at this point. He's not a ball handler. Like, he really is just your bench shooter in lineups where, like, when Harden is running the bench unit, you put JJ Redick in the corner and maybe running off-ball screens with whoever else is on the floor. And, like, he provides utility and a threat there. But really, it's like, if he didn't live in Brooklyn and didn't have a very popular podcast, I really don't think we'd be talking about JJ Redick going to the Nets. You know, like, because he doesn't, the Nets really don't need him. But sometimes these ideas get momentum, even in NBA front offices, and I could see him being there. But the other names listed as well, Dwight Howard, I'd say no.
Yeah.
Hard no. I don't see his personality. Like, I think him and Harden hate each other.
It's a problem, yeah.
So I don't see it happening. Carmelo Anthony, I do like the idea of Carmelo, only because, like, the Nets, if they had Carmelo in that Bucks series, would have beat the Bucks.
Hmm.
He doesn't provide any defense, but he's evolved to the point where, as a bench scorer, like, he is pretty effective.
That's always, like, it's always been his thing.
How much scoring do you need if you have a healthy Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, and James Harden? You don't, but you, like, it would be a good thing to have if he was like, hey, I just want to move back to New York and play with these superstars and have fun. I like the idea. I don't know if, though, like, I still think it's not a perfect fit, but I think it's good. Does Carmelo interest you?
Yeah. I mean, like, if it's truly like a vet minimum deal, like, I think it's actually a pretty slick move. As like a, you know, you're having Carmelo Anthony as your eighth man, especially, like, players seem to quite like Carmelo Anthony, despite how he seems from the outside looking in. Like, he's got, you know, the player on player mojo working. So I don't think it's going to be like a conflict of interest. He seems to have really embraced being a, you know, utility player at this point. So of the people on this list, I think that that's a decent idea. I think the Nerlens Noel thing, and I'll also just patch in Mitchell Robinson, although that's a very different financial situation, because he's also a free agent, I believe, this year.
I don't know.
So he's also coming off a broken foot. I had the same injury, the Jones fracture, as Mitchell Robinson. So if he wants to connect on that level, I'm here for you. But that type of player is interesting to me. Again, I think, like, the Knicks, like, I prefer to watch Nick Claxton evolve into that than pay, you know, any, like.
Well, I think Nerlens Noel is going to get some money because he was good enough
yeah.
with.
Oh, yeah. Both of them. I think both of them are in the DeAndre
Mitchell
Jordan.
Robinson has like a qualifying offer. I think the Knicks still control him for this upcoming season.
Got it. Okay. It looks like. So, but either way, like, I wonder if they have to make, I mean, they kind of have to make a decision on that. Like, do they want two of the basically like players with so overlapping skill sets like that? Maybe they do. I mean, I don't know. Seems like if one goes down, you can just insert the other and keep going because that's what happened. But yeah, I mean,
also, well, to me, seems like a guy who's going to get the taxpayer mid-level. Like, he's going to get some money.
I agree.
Because and Mitchell Robinson's going to get an extension. And with the Knicks' decision is like, do we trade him now and get out? Like, do we get away from paying him whatever, how much money you have to pay Mitchell Robinson?
Yeah.
Which I don't know what you do with that, but.
And then the last one, Bismack Biyombo, it's fun to think about. He's, as a player, I like really detest Bismack Biyombo just because he's such a wrecking ball. But, you know, it's not the worst thing to have on this team. I have a prejudice against Bismack, but I'll just say, like, I've always disliked his, like, his complete lack of skill. And players like that I've generally disliked in the past who are kind of like there to, you know, stat pad for rebounds, things like that. Like, I don't love it.
Reggie Evans.
Reggie Evans comes to mind. How did you know?
You.
but yeah, I think like that kind of that form of utility player is like, if you want to do that, like I go Reggie Evans over Bismack Biyombo again. Like, I want to pull from our young guys a little bit more, just as a theme in general for this stuff. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I got to be honest. I haven't seen Bismack Biyombo play for like 1,000 years. Like, yeah. I remember him getting that big contract and then immediately being horrible.
Dude, he played pretty well. Let's see. Not well. I mean, he played a lot.
Yeah, and like, so my whole thing with like the Nets center situation, which is why I love Boban, is that like, I really don't want them to go like sort of that, like, I don't want a small ball five. Not that Biyombo is classically a center. He's not that tall, but like, he's always been a center at this point. I still really would aim more towards like, there's this guy I love in the draft, which is getting too much buzz. And everyone who follows us on at BK Glue Guys knows I'm tweeting about this guy. I don't know to pronounce his name correctly, but it's Nemias Keita. He's a Portuguese big man who played for Utah State for 3 years. He, just to let everyone in on my draft process here, and it's flawless because I've always been able to pick out gems when I drafted teams, is you look at, if you're looking for defenders who are big, look at blocks and steals. Because what most people don't realize is that a steal is like the assist of defense in some ways. Where if you're a big man and you're getting steals, that means that like you're doing more than just standing by the rim. It means you're more active because you're getting out there. Your hands are quicker usually if you're getting steals. Not all the time, but sometimes. And he's like a 18, 10, like 2-3 blocks a game and 2 steals a game. And I love him. So I don't – Bismack Biyombo at this point, it's like, I don't know. I'd rather have a Boban. Like, I'd rather overpay for Boban a little bit than get like cheap Bismack Biyombo and be like, ugh, I don't know if I really want him on the floor ever again.
Fair.
There's a big out there that a lot of Nets fans have tweeted about.
Okay.
That hasn't been discussed yet. I don't know if he's in the emails, but Enes Kanter. Enes Kanter is the classic type of center, big man who destroys the Nets at every opportunity he gets. Does he make sense in your mind as being someone that would fill a role on this team?
So whenever, again, this is like a bias because to what you were saying, he does like disproportionately kick the Nets' butts for some reason, though. Everywhere he goes, there seems to be a pretty polarizing player, and yes. He's never had a really long term gig, or at least not in the last couple of years. So I'm sort of I don't trust my opinion on Enes Kanter. That's sort of on Enes Kanter. I just don't think he like. So it seems to be sort of, it's a kind of an interesting parallel because like of the Bismack Biyombo, but like a better version of that, but still like kind of a wrecking ball that's less athletic, bigger, but still like, I imagine probably going to be a player that frustrates me quite a bit. If I had to guess, that's going to be where he falls.
And I'll admit this about Boban but Kanter too. It's like the Nets' best defensive success is when they were switching everything and the one thing, maybe why Biombo is more interesting, is that he can switch where, to some degree, where Kanter, like, if he's switching on to any guard in the NBA, he's going to get roasted.
And the thing about Kanter, too, is that, like, he weirdly has, like, big night. Like, he'll still, to this day, have, like, a 20-20 night somehow out of his butt. Like, he'll just do, yeah. like, which Bismack Biyombo will never, ever do. It's a funny comparison, but we'll go with it. Next up, Cherboy Matthew Abramowitz says, hey, guys. Here's the situation.
It's a good question.
You have the option of keeping two of these three: Jeff Green, Bruce Brown, Blake Griffin. Who do you choose? And off of that, if you have to replace Jeff Green, who are the ideal targets? I disagree with the premise that you have to replace a Jeff Green if you're getting rid, because, you know, there's that's. I love Jeff Green, and I think I might, of the three.
We'll get into it. I think we both would say Bruce Brown is on our list of two or three. So it comes down to Jeff Green or Blake Griffin.
Yeah.
And I don't think necessarily that will – that you could actually probably keep Blake and Jeff Green. They both won Fed Mint. But who do you rather have for the playoffs, for the long season? Would you rather have Jeff Green or Blake?
Can I add a little bit to this? Like, you were saying, Boban came alive, like, in the playoffs, where he didn't play at all during the regular season for the most part, but he was, like, a pretty necessary little, like, insert. I mean, not necessarily.
They lost, played him with Kristaps Porzingis.
And it was great.
Which was amazing.
But, I'm preparing you to hear some blasphemy here. I feel like there's a little bit of the flip side of that with Bruce Brown, which is that he's very playable in the regular season and then can be exploited to some extent until he figures out how to cover up some spots in his game on offense in the playoffs, sure, where people really drill down on what people can and can't do. So for me, I think Bruce Brown is obviously, like, he's got a cool and interesting ceiling, but in lieu of, like, a real solution to some of his, you know, if he adds ball handling and playmaking to what he can do, I think he's, like, buying, like, way awesome, great fit. Like, if he can just add, like, that next little level of, like, if he spent the whole offseason just dribbling and passing, then great. We could really do something here. But short of that, like, it is a little bit, I was a little bit like, oh, can we play Bruce Brown for this amount of minutes against the Bucks right now? Are we going to be able to do that? Where I never, ever feel that way about Jeff Green or Blake Griffin. Blake Griffin's also a young man. He's 32.
Isn't Jeff Green about that age too?
Let's see. I thought he was older, but I could be wrong.
But I understand what you're saying about Bruce Brown. I think Bruce impacts the game in multiple levels, but he does have, like, the flaws that as he should, as being, like, a former second round pick and a guy who was probably thrust into a role that obviously the Nets weren't expecting because they didn't play him to start the year. What's Jeff Green age?
He's going to be 35 next season. Starting. Jeez, season.
Old dog. Yeah, he's old dog.
He's a crusty dog.
To me, Bruce Brown's a lock though. If we're doing this exercise, keeping two out of three, Bruce Brown's a lock. And it comes down to Jeff Green and Blake in my mind. Man, this is hard. I almost feel like the Nets got lucky with how well Blake played for stretches of the playoffs, where Jeff Green feels more repeatable. Like, he's a better shooter. He's a bit more laterally athletic, and obviously he's become a better dunker than Blake. While Blake can still dunk. It's really, really tough. I want to say Jeff Green in my head, but Blake can do more things. And I kind of like that Blake became this, like, pest in the playoffs, and that he was, like, real willing to do the dirty work and all that stuff. Man, it's really hard.
It's really hard.
It's really hard. What's your answer? Tell me.
I actually, this is going to blow people's minds. I might go Jeff Green and Blake Griffin. I may have talked because, like, Bruce Brown's, you know, depending on what his number is, that might get unappealing at some point. And not unappealing, because he's always appealing. There's always Bruce Brown will always appeal. But if that number takes up to like 9 million a year, which is possible, it's totally possible. Probably even.
I call Bruce Brown Rudy Giuliani because he'll always appeal.
Yeah. Nice. Solid. Just in terms of like basketball on court product,
that was a good joke.
You're on fire.
That was a good joke.
We got to do more early pods. This is when you're at your best. You get you're
really I'm like lounging here on the floor.
You've got great energy.
This is a long pod, and I don't know. Is it like a two parter? Does this have the energy of a two parter?
This could be a two parter, and we also might want to just dip off and save the next part for the next show when you and I get together.
Sure.
Yeah.
Can I do one last bit? I shouldn't do this bit. I should save it. Well,
let's do the thing. I'm going to say Jeff Green and Blake Griffin. I'm just going to say it. I'm going to have the huevos to say that to those two guys on a vet min is going to be super valuable. I love Bruce Brown. It pains me to say this, but if he's getting paid $9 million a year and we have to match, it's a problem.
Yeah. So in reality, I think Bruce Brown's gone, and I think both Blake and Jeff Green come back. Mm-hmm. In my dream scenario, I think it's Bruce Brown definitely comes back. And then, oh God, I guess I should say Blake. Like, I should say if you were picking a basketball team from scratch, you would still say Blake at this point over Jeff Green. So I'll say Blake.
There it is.
So bye, Jeff. Friend of the show, Jeff Green.
So we have three more emails that I had sanctioned off. Two from, our Mount Rushmore. We can save this for the next pod because this is going long. We're already long, and we can keep it going. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll save it for the next pod. But and I've got some more targets, possibly. And I'll sprinkle them out throughout another show. But just to recap, basically what we figured out is Otto Porter is going to be a net. Boban's going to be a net. The Nets are sign and trading Spencer Dinwiddie to the Sixers to bring back Ben Simmons in a crazy trade.
Yeah.
And the Nets are going to win the next four NBA championships.
Percent chance that we're the team that starts engaging for the Ben Simmons talk. I feel like it's of teams that can do this, I feel like we're weirdly in a good position. I know it sounds crazy to talk about, but.
Well, okay, can I do a couple? Let's do a couple. This is the conspiracy theory part of this thing. Again, so Ben Simmons is part of Clutch, and Clutch would probably like to angle Ben Simmons in. I mean, they would probably love to have him on the Lakers or Clippers. Maybe not the Clippers, but like somewhere big. They would like Ben Simmons to continue to be like a really prominent star in the NBA. The minute that like Chris Haynes would tweet out, sources say a dark horse team has emerged in the Ben Simmons sweepstakes and it's the Brooklyn Nets, people would lose their minds. Like, remember how angry people got when Blake Griffin, when it was rumored that he was going to be a net?
Right.
It would be 10 times that.
Right.
He would fit on this team amazingly well.
Mm-hmm.
Because his lack of shooting wouldn't mean anything because he would be screening. He'd be setting up in certain spots.
Oh, you know what? We just talked about this. It's Bruce Brown with handles who's actually big enough to play the position. That's,
yes.
Yeah.
They basically send Ben Simmons Bruce Brown tape and say, this is what you're going to do,
yeah.
But you're going to be better than Bruce Brown because you're Ben Simmons.
Yeah.
The trade could happen and it could work. Now, the question is, does Daryl Morey really want to send Ben Simmons to Brooklyn, right? Like you're basically giving up.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to – unless if you really think Ben Simmons is so – bad that he would sabotage what the Nets are doing.
Yeah.
The other factor, and this is completely, I understand that this is such a myopic view, such a small-minded American mindset of foreign relations.
We're just humans.
Sean Marks is from New Zealand and Ben Simmons is from Australia.
That's hilarious.
Understand completely that is like that is actually like saying I am from America and someone's from Panama. Like the distance between the two countries, I'm sure, is massive, and there's no relation. But in my mind, New Zealand and Australia are
boys.
Brother
boys.
And sister.
Yeah, those are boys.
And Sean Marks probably has known Ben Simmons or known about him for a long time, like anyone. And like, is there some soothsaying, is that the phrase? Is there some sort of Mark's Pacific, South Pacific Islander magic that he could impart?
Right, because here's what you want to do is you want to get Sean Marks to pour that kiwi poison in his ear, right, so that he requests the trade specifically and then gives you more leverage. That's how you get the leverage.
There's more direct flights out of JFK to Sydney than there are from whatever terrible airport is in Philadelphia. I actually don't know that. What's the airport in Philadelphia?
I don't know. It's very prominent. I pass it every time. It's like really, it's on the way. It feels like it's on the way to everywhere when you're down there.
Anyway, so that's the deal. That's what we figured
out. Lock it in. This is becoming a two-parter. So there's going to be more emails and a whole lot more of what we actually think on the next episode, the next riveting episode of The Glue Guys. Mike, isn't that true? Do you agree with that?
Yeah. You can find us on HBO Max. Yeah. We are also streaming live on CNN.
Yep.
And thank you for listening.
Thanks, everybody. More soon. Bye.